Education Minister is writing exams. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Boss. Honorable members, I think it's important that just to go past through issues. Maybe if members feel we may attend to those issues when we are done with the business of the day. I'm sure we have seen some developments that have taken place both globally and at a national level. As I say, it may not be because it's not a part of our meeting today. If members want to have I don't want to say it can't be for discussions, but if they feel there is a need for the committee to entertain those issues, maybe we can deal with that and share ideas on it. I'm sure honorable members saw last week that in the Randburg High Court,
recording in progress,
there was an appearance by the former DDG of the then Department of Mineral Resources on charges of fraud, corruption and money laundering. I hope I'm correct. Those for now, by the information in the public domain, relate to the issue of the rehabilitation fund that was signed out before or during the period of operation, or even before operation, as far as the optimum mine is concerned. And I think the case for now has been rescheduled. I may not be sure of the date, but also the former DDG was said to be in ill health and said he could not proceed. But some of those who were with him in court, they were released on bail. I'm not sure of the amount, but I'm just saying, I don't want us to keep quiet and then pretend as if there's nothing, especially if it relates to, in as much as most of us may not have been there in the fifth parliament, because in the main, it will relate to the fifth parliament. If honorable members allow us, maybe we can have just a small chat on whether there is a need for this committee to attend to this matter. Surely it can't be today, but also on what could be the approach if members feel that it has to be the case. The second one is what we have been learning in terms of the global news. It's matters that relate to manipulation of state institutions, be it judges, politicians, or whatever the case that might be. I may not have the first-hand information. That relates to Glencore, was found to have been doing most of these things, if I'm not mistaken again, in the US, but also the UK and Australia. Unfortunately, there's nothing that relates to our own country, but the fact remains, the head or the person in charge is a South African citizen, but also the company is understood or known as a South African company. And this might be relating to matters within our sector. Again, as I say, we can't pretend as if we don't know, or we don't have to agree. But it's up to members. They may feel that no, there is no need for this committee to bother itself about such, or we need to consider a particular approach, or we play a wait and see. So I will allow, if honorable members agree, that maybe when we are done with today's presentation, let's just have a snapshot on whether is there a need for this committee to handle this, noting that it is not on the program of the committee for this quarter. On that note, but also regrettable, as we meet today, the issue that this committee has been faced and been grappling with, finalized and has submitted the report on of the fuel crisis, I think we must agree that we are really in the deep end of the crisis now, as we will see that we are going to be having the highest hike as far as fuel prices are concerned from midnight to tonight. I think that is one part that we may have concluded as far as the work of the committee is concerned on that matter, but it's not standing and waiting for us to process it through the other channels of Parliament, in particular the National Assembly. But it's just important to note that those are the serious challenges that we are having as this committee. Without any further delays, can we go to the agenda, Mr. Godfrey and Ms. Boss? Okay, I think we've done with the other issues. We are going to have a briefing by the MRE on AFRA, which is the African Regional Cooperative Agreement for Research, Development and Training. Related to nuclear science and technology. And then we will then, if when we have exhausted, if members agree, is there any minutes, Ari? Can you go down?
Yes, Chairman, it's of
24. Do the minutes. Before we do the minutes of the 24th, I wanted to see the before we do the minutes of the 24th, we will then, if members agree, we will then have this net chat on the two issues that I have raised. Do members agree? Maybe is there anyone who supports the idea that let's just have a snap chat so that if members say no, we just there's no need for that. I will also take that. And I check, is there a support that we have a Snapchat on the two issues that one is raised? I said the hand of honorable Mylem. Is there any other hand that will, okay. In the absence of that, I see the hand of honorable Mylem.
Chair, I actually just wanted to agree. Sorry, I was meaning to put a thumbs up, and because I'm using my phone, it put my hand up. But I wanted to support your idea.
I see your hand. Okay, Honorable Mashaule.
Thanks, Chair, and greetings to you, and greetings to my colleagues and the department. I think we can't be bystanders, Chair. We ought to have a bite on what is happening on the two issues. So I support your suggestion, Chair.
Thank you very much, honourable members. We will try and we will go and do that. Okay. Can we then go to the department? I'm not sure who's leading the department. I tried to see whether Mamu Kamete is here, but I see that Mr. Mbambo and Mr. Mbele are present, and Mr. Mswiza, I assume those are people who are at the level of the CDG. Whoever is fit can do so.
Good morning, Chairperson, and the honorable members and the colleagues in the meeting. My name is Zizamele Mbambo. I am the DDG for Nuclear Energy Regulation and Management. I will lead the delegation from the department. I would like to tender an apology for the acting DG. DG is attending the strategic breakaway session for the ESET cluster. Thank you, Chair. With your permission, may I then request that the presentation be shared? May I request that the presentation be shared? I see, yes, thank you very much. Honorable members, I am joined by the National Liaison Office, Ms. Lerato Makhaye, who's also a national coordinator for the AFRA in the department. So she will come in and when necessary. In terms of the presentation layout, we're going to deal with the purpose and we deal with the background, the strategic importance of AFRA, the status of ratification of AFRA, the amendments, the consultation, the status of the amended AFRA, the implementation plan, risk and mitigation, and recommendations. For the purpose of this presentation is to appraise the portfolio committee on the tabling in Parliament, the acceptance and the ratification of the amended African Regional Cooperative Agreement for research, development, and training related to nuclear science and technology, AFRA, in terms of Section 231, subsection 2 of the Constitution. We have submitted Annexure A, which then deals with the amended AFRA agreement. Also to recommend that the Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources and Energy support the acceptance of the amended African Regional Cooperative Agreement for Research, Development, and Training related to Nuclear Science and Technology be tabled in Parliament in terms of Section 231, subsection 2 of the Constitution. As part of the background of AFRA, AFRA is an intergovernmental agreement among countries in the Africa region, which was established in February 1990 to promote cooperation among the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA member states in the region, as well as between these and the IAEA in the peaceful applications of nuclear science and technology. AFRA mission derives from the AFRA agreement, which is to be the leading regional organization in Africa and the vehicle of the states for the effective promotion and coordination of the peaceful applications of nuclear science and technology for socio-economic development on the African continent. The International Atomic Energy Agency is not party to AFRA, but provides the technical and scientific backstopping, as well as financial and administrative support in accordance with the applicable procedures and rules to the agency's technical cooperation program. The AFRA agreement entered into force on the 4th of April, 1990. AFRA has the membership of 46 African countries. We've attached Annexure B, which provides the list of countries that are members of AFRA. South Africa is an active member of AFRA. South Africa hosted the technical working group meeting of AFRA in 2019. And this is where member states agreed on the proposed amendment during that technical working group meetings. Also, South Africa held the chairpersonship position for AFRA in 2020. South Africa participated in 23 AFRA projects. Seven South African institutions designated as regional designated centers. South Africa hosts the regional events of AFRA. As an example, the Nuclear Energy Management School, which will be hosted in partnership with the IAEA and NERSA and the department in June 2022, which provides a highly specialized nuclear management training to nuclear managers in the region, including South Africa. Article 14 of the AFRA agreement states that the agreement shall continue to be in force for a period of 5 years from the date of its inception, with a possibility to extend for further period of 5 years if the government parties so agree. In terms of the strategic importance of AFRA, the objectives of AFRA programs are to maximize the utilization of available infrastructure and expertise in Africa in the field of nuclear science and technology, to accelerate moves towards regional self-sufficiency in selected peaceful applications by coordinating intellectual and physical resources and disseminating innovative methods and practices cost-effectively. AFRA activities contribute significantly towards the achievement of national and regional development objectives. The scope of their activities cover a wide range of peaceful applications of nuclear techniques that contribute towards the achievement of national and regional development goals. South Africa benefits in the technical cooperation to use the available regional expertise and existing facilities for planning and implementation of cooperative programs under human health, food and agriculture, energy, environment, water management, and industrial applications. To further the fulfillment of AFRA mandate, the government parties adopted the following strategic goals, the SGs. Strategic goal number one, to enhance the sustainable contribution of nuclear science and technology to meet the developmental needs and interests of member states. Strategic goal number two, to entrench the culture of mutual assistance and regional cooperation in the effective utilization of available nuclear expertise and infrastructure. Strategic goal number three, to deepen the culture of nuclear safety and security at regional and national levels in the gainful exploitation of nuclear science and technology. Strategic goal number four, to interact continuously with and create awareness amongst decision makers, civil society, users, and the general public on the benefits of peaceful application of nuclear science and technology. Strategic goal number five, to institute good governance and excellence in the management of activities in the region. In terms of the amendments to the AFRA agreement, the main changes in the agreement are as follows. The preamble, where the parties replaced the 1990 agreement with the revised document, and states that the agreement shall continue to be enforced indefinitely. And paragraph 2 of the Article 14, which further gives member states an opportunity to withdraw from the agreement through a written notification to the IAEA DG, and will take effect 6 months upon receipt of the withdrawal notification. In terms of the consultation, the amended AFRA agreement was submitted to both the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, and DERCO, Office of Chief State Law Advisors, International Law, for advice. Both departments confirmed that the provisions of the amended agreement are consistent with the domestic laws of the Republic of South Africa and the international laws. The agreement was classified as Section 231, subsection 2 of the Constitution, and parliamentary approval is required. The department collaborates with other departments and state agencies to implement the AFRA program. In terms of the status on the ratification of the amended AFRA, in terms of Article 14, subsection 1 of the revised AFRA, the agreement will enter into force upon received by the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency a notification of acceptance by three members of the African region. On March 2020, the DG of the IEA received the notification from the three African countries, that is the Republic of Ghana, the Republic of Uganda, and the People's Democratic Republic of Algeria. To date, 16 countries have accepted the AFRA agreement. In terms of the implementation plan, the National Liaison Office of the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy administers all issues within the scope of AFRA program. The National Liaison Officer is the focal point to coordinate the IEA technical cooperation programs in South Africa and also the national coordinator of the AFRA program. The National Liaison Office monitors the implementation of the AFRA agreement, through the AFRA program. In terms of the continuation of the plan, the implementation plan, the department through the National Liaison Officer also facilitate capacity building through the fellows, which are available to university graduates or their equivalent and to individuals at technician level in the requested field, mainly through project oriented on the job training. Also facilitate the scientific visits, which are awarded to senior staff with at least 5 years experience in the working field. The department also facilitates the IAEA meetings through the National Liaison Officer Office, where technical consultant meetings, workshops, and conferences also take place in South Africa at a regional level. And also, we then facilitate the expert missions for experts to come and do their research in South African nuclear institutions, as well as the South African experts that go and do research at institutions in the region. Honorable members, this slide is mainly just to demonstrate the fellowship program, the various institutions that host fellows in South Africa, as well as the number of fellows from which different countries they're coming from. As an example, 61 fellows are being processed, and 48 were placed, and 13 are still being processed. Most placement, we're just indicating that it's in the Stellenbosch University. So this is mainly directed by the area of expertise that the different fellows would like to specialize in, and they would identify these institutions, and we will then, as South Africa, facilitate their placement at these institutions. This is very important, honorable members, because it demonstrates the collaboration that at the region we want to leverage on the existing institutions and existing facilities in sharing the knowledge and strengthening the benefits of peaceful use of nuclear technology. Next slide. In terms of the risk and the risk mitigation, we're highlighting here that South Africa is one of the founding members of AFRA and has an advanced nuclear program. And this is, we highlighted, honorable members would note that South Africa is the only country in Africa that's got an operational nuclear power station, which is Quebec. And we also have a number of nuclear facilities, including the Safari Research Reactor at NEXA. Failure to ratify the amended AFRA poses a risk that South Africa may be limited in opportunities to effectively participate in AFRA program and lose a leadership role in the continent in terms of nuclear application. If a member does not accede to the amended AFRA agreement, it could be limited from participating in the AFRA policy meetings and other AFRA projects and activities. To mitigate the risks, it is crucial for the Republic of South Africa to ratify the amended AFRA agreement. In terms of the recommendations, it is recommended that the Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources and Energy note that the amended AFRA agreement was submitted to both the Department of Justice and the Constitutional Development, the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, and DERCO, Office of the Chief State Law Advisors International Law, for advice. Both departments confirmed that the provisions of the amended AFRA agreements are consistent with the domestic laws of the Republic of South Africa and the international laws. It is also recommended that the committee notes that Cabinet approved the amended AFRA agreement to be tabled in Parliament in terms of Section 231, subsection 2 of the Constitution. It is further recommended that the committee support the acceptance and ratification in Parliament in terms of Section 231, subsection 2 of the Constitution. Honorable members, these are just annexures which we've already discussed. Annexure A deals with the amended AFRA agreement, and Annexure B is a list of countries that are members to the AFRA agreement. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mbambo. My phone, my gadget was beginning to give me its own problems, but not that much bad. Honorable members, there is the presentation by the department. Are there any questions of clarity or comments? I see the hand of Honorable Mailem. I see the hand of Honorable Mahlaule. I see the end of Honorable Matokwe, Honorable Maninga. Okay. Good, be Honorable Mailem, Honorable Mahlaule, Honorable Matokwe, Honorable Maninga.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you very much for the presentation. It's much appreciated. I just have one question, and that is, what are the risks, not the risks, what are the obligations on South Africa, both financial and otherwise, in terms of this agreement? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have noticed that in the presentation, what is asked of us is to make amendments to two clauses. And to me, they are a sensible request because they deal with the time frames which seeks not to bottleneck the country into international agreements that are not well defined. And I just want to ask that with those two request of amendment. What is it that they're expecting us to do from here? Because I don't see why we should waste time on two clauses that to me are sensible, unless I'm persuaded otherwise that there is something wrong with those clauses, so that we don't waste time. We agree to this thing and then it goes out, we deal with the other issues. Chair, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'd also like to welcome the presentation. I just have two questions. I think the first one is, I think the amendment was drafted, I think, around 2020, if I'm not mistaken. So I want to understand why it's only being discussed now. And secondly, I think the presentation also spoke to that 17 out of the 44 countries have accepted the amendment. I'm not sure. So I'm trying to understand as well, why is it like less than 50%? What is happening with the other countries in terms of accepting the amendment, and why are they not accepting if they are not? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to yourself, members of the Portfolio Committee, the department, our committee staff, and everybody on the call. Chair, let me also welcome the presentation. Mine is just to ascertain, Chair, that this will be the only amendments that we are requested to note and agree. As Mr. Mbambo and the team certain that with this document, the two amendments that they are requesting us to amend, are they the only ones? Have they satisfied themselves that the entire document is correct? They only need to amend those two clauses. Thank you very much, Chair.
Mr. Mbambo?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members, for a comprehensive set of questions. I will deal with the questions, and I will also request the National Liaison Officer, Ms. Lerato Makhaya, to also add in if there will be any need for additional inputs. The Honorable Member Malem asked whether there is any obligations to South Africa in terms of financial and otherwise, by participating into this AFRA agreement. The Honorable Member Malem, yes, South Africa as a member of the International Atomic Energy Agency and also a member of this AFRA agreement is required to provide financial contributions to the IEA for its membership to this organization, as well as in AFRA. And in terms of the estimated amount for the membership fees that South Africa pays or contribute to AFRA in terms of this financial year 2022-2023, it's around 3.1 million that South Africa pays as part of the membership fee in the AFRA program. And we believe that as South Africa, it's very critical that we do make our membership fees payments into this organization, because as a country, we derive value for money through participating in various research and development programs related to nuclear science and technology that are of benefit to South Africa and the public in many areas that are relevant for the application of the nuclear technology. Nuclear technology plays a significant role in many day-to-day applications that are important to the public. And we believe that for South Africa to keep itself at the cutting edge of this particular technology, it's a money well spent through its membership fees in participating into this African regional agreement. And it also strengthen the South African positions to make sure that it makes its facilities available to members in the regions to bring in their experts to come and conduct their research here in South Africa, and also provide a platform for South Africa to send its own experts to the region and participate in the research and development programs that are undertaken in the continent that are of benefit to achieve the objectives of the region as a whole. So that I will stop there in as far as this one is concerned. Then also just an addition to this one is that when the fellows come to South Africa, they then also would be spending resources, money that they come with in South Africa. So it's got a multiplier effect in terms of what the country receives through what we contribute towards the membership fee within the AFRI. Then on the question raised by Honorable Member Mahlaule, and I think it's very important just to emphasize the point that this particular agreement, the amendments are similar to the agreement itself is identical to the original existing agreement of 1990. And as you correctly put it, Honorable Members, only two areas that were amended. And we look into this, they do not have any material impact into the actual agreement so that it becomes binding to South Africa. At this stage, because it's been amended and we have not yet ratified the acceptance of this amendment, it's still not yet binding to South Africa. So that's the purpose of the department bringing in these amendments to the committee. And also to note, it is an international multilateral agreement that's governed through the sections of the Constitution. And we have to go through this process and we seek the support for the committee for it to proceed to the table in Parliament. Thanks. And then on the issues raised by Honorable Member Matokwe, why the amendment are brought in now when the agreement came into force in 2020, in April, that's this is a matter that requires a process to go through the various approval structures within South Africa to make sure that it becomes binding. So the department has been undertaking this process ever since the agreement came to force through presenting it into the various structures, the DGs cluster, the ministerial cluster of cabinet up to cabinet to finally approve that it be tabled in Parliament. And it was only approved in cabinet in August 2021. So as a department, we've been then dealing with following through the processes to make sure that it is indeed served in the Parliament for it to be approved. So there's not been a delay in terms of the department taking forward the agreement to make sure that it's finally ratified for acceptance by Parliament so that it becomes binding to South Africa. So that's the reason. It's a matter of following through the parliamentary processes for the approval of the agreement. And they require engagements at different structures of government for it to be then finally approved. Then the Honorable Member also raised why other countries are not accepting the agreement, indicating that there's about 50% of members that have accepted the amendment. Honorable members, I will not be in a position to speak for other countries' reasons why they would not have been managing to accede to the amendment. Safe to say that other countries have indeed looked at this and accepted the amendments. And also, as South Africa, we actively participated in the negotiations and the formulation of the amendments. And so we understood that the technical working group that was hosted in South Africa in 2019 was in full agreement with the amendments. And these were then recommended to the AFRA representatives, which is the highest decision-making body for AFRA in 2019, September. And all these countries then accepted the amendment. So what is now happening is that the agreement is going through approval processes in different countries, which would then be treating the amendment through their structures, as we are doing as South Africa, to taking it through our approval processes of Parliament. So that's the input we can make there. But as to the specific reasons, we would not be in a position to determine why the reason. But the agreement is well accepted technically, that creates a very good foundation for countries to cooperate on peaceful use of nuclear technology for socio-economic developments. And each country, in terms of its needs and priorities, then participate and make proposals of different projects that could be undertaken at the research and development area. Then Honorable Member Malina raised the point whether the department has satisfied itself that these are only two amendments that are required in the agreement. And we would agree to that, that we've gone through a rigorous process as the department to make sure that the agreement is being subjected to the legal review after it was technically agreed at the different structures of AFRA. And our departments of constitutional justice and constitutional development confirms that the agreement is in line with the domestic laws, as well as the Department of DERCO, international laws, the Office of the Chief State Law Advisors, international laws, confirms that the agreement is in line with South Africa's international obligations and international law. So we are satisfied as a department that these are the only amendments that are recommended as part of this agreement. And that's what was agreed at a level of AFRA, where South Africa actively participated as a founding member of this organization. I will stop there, Honorable Chair, and request whether the National Liaison Officer would like to add if there's any important information that would help to give to the committee. With your agreement, Chair, may I request Ms. Lerato to also make inputs into the discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Mbambo, and thank you to the chairperson. Maybe just one point, Mr. Mbambo, that I can add, that one of the reasons why the members decided to amend this area to say that the agreement shall be enforced indefinitely was because of the challenges that every 5 years they have to go back to their governments and to follow the internal processes of getting it to be acceded. This has posed to be a challenge. In the past, the agreement has been renewed 3 times already. Then the members took a decision there to make sure that they do not have these challenges that they are now currently being in, trying to get it through their governments, is to make the agreement to be enforced indefinitely. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Mr. Mbambo.
Thank you very much, Ms. Makhai. May I then hand over to you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mbambo and your team. Look, sometimes I understand your challenge in the public service. If we were to put this thing back, let's check. The first thing I'm interested in is the matter that relates to your June whatever 2022 engagement, which is led by NEXA, the department. That's the first one. Number two, just if you can put back that slide. Number two is the issue that relates to strategic goal, ne? Number five. And I'll tell you why I'm raising those things. I want you to put, if possible, can you reflect your submission? But the reason I'm saying, Mr. Mbambo, I think here it's not an agreement. The agreement exists. You are tabling an amendment on an existing agreement. And there are two things, and please help me. That's why I always say, sometimes you like to prepare, and I have resigned now that public service, they don't fear writing. They don't have a problem, very comfortable. There are two things here that we are putting. One, call it a ratification or an amendment to an existing agreement. The first one is that the agreement signed and agreed to now is no longer subject to a revolving period. It is indefinite. I think that's what, for me, I thought you were saying. The second thing is that in the existence of the agreement, if a party or a country seeks to withdraw from the agreement, that country must submit a letter of withdrawal, a notice of withdrawal, and then that will come into effect or cease to be a member 6 months after deposing the notice of withdrawal. Now, if that is the case, that's the issue. Tell me if I'm wrong with that assumption. Because I wanted us to go to those two issues. Can we go back to those two issues that, for me, I'm saying they are more like proposed amendments? Leave all this. Where it says the exactly, yes. So this is the issue, the amendments are on this. Now go back to the amendment. Yes, here. So these are the two issues. I like to simplify things. The first amendment is on the agreement. The agreement exists, is to be enforced indefinitely. That's now your 1980 agreement. That's the amendment that is being suggested. The second amendment, it gives member states an opportunity to withdraw from the agreement through a written notification to the IAEA DG, which is the, and such will take effect 6 months upon receipt of the withdrawal notice. That's, to me, the main body. The rest, you are just sharing information on the original, the processes that you have gone through. For me, I think that's what members are saying. What are the advantages of an indefinite agreement? Well, that's what it says, that this agreement will be forced indefinitely. You said, I assume then it is based on the fact that your periodic ratifications, which means, now you said you have amended it, I think, three times since it existed. Two is the issue of the withdrawal. That is fine. My question then will be, at what point, which is, I think that's what another man, if I'm not mistaken, Honorable Malinga was asking, at what point or which mechanism will be used in the event of an indefinite agreement to review or look at ratification amendments that could be made again. That's what I can't find here to say. I would have thought, I see the withdrawal, I see the indefinite, but I can't, maybe I don't have the original or the actual content. With these two amendments, what then becomes, because if it's indefinite, it means it is enforced indefinitely, but also one can read and say, it means you cannot make any agreement. It remains enforced indefinitely. At what point would you look at amending or reviewing the agreement? I think that will be the question for me, because I would have thought you would put a third amendment, which in particular will talk to the amendment one of an indefinite agreement now. Because one would say, if the agreement is indefinite, it means it cannot be. That could be the ease of English. Now let's go to the one you're rushing me to, which is the one on the June. And I will tell you why I'm talking about the June one that you said. In some way you said it's Nexa and yourselves as a department. Now can go. No. There's some, let's leave. Let's go to. Now go back. Okay, let's make it soon. You can go back if we go to strategy goal number 5, deal with it. I wonder where you is linked to. So the kind of better is linked to your whether workshop or whatever activity. Then you go back. Yes, let's go. School strategy goal number 4, not 5. It says to interact continuously with and create. No, don't run now. You were there. Strategic goal number 4. You went back and you left it. Oh, your amendment. Yes. Don't. Now it says to interact continuously with and create awareness amongst decision makers, civil society, users, and the general public on the benefits of peaceful application of nuclear science and technology. Now, that's why I wanted that if we understand better your whatever it is. I'm raising this thing because I lack benefit of knowledge of how the actual agreement was interacted to and understood by members of parliament, in particular the committee responsible for this, that I could even extend to other relevant committees. Don't you think, I might be wrong jumping the gun, don't you think it would be much better or much more inclusive and more consultative effectively if you engage these people on your June conference or whatever you are calling it, because it seems to be very difficult. Otherwise, for me, your strategic goal number 4 will then become just something written in paper. Because when you bring in such agreements, you expect members of parliament to be more empowered and not just have logic, but also be more informed on how you arrive on such decisions. The problem is that when these things come now, they come only to be rectified without in-depth knowledge from the people that you want approval from. Now, don't you think if, and I'm saying I'm not jumping the gun, put it simple, don't you think platforms like those ones are the necessary and correct platforms so that when you bring matters of this nature in future, they are well and more informed than being confronted by something now that one can argue until you have been more exposed to them compared to that exercise. I wanted to raise those few issues. I'm not sure whether honorable members would have wanted to make follow-ups on what they've raised initially. Okay, can you have a take on what I've raised on the three issues, whether that would be a correct assessment or view that it will require to be attended to.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, for a comprehensive set of questions. The Chair, you raise a very important issue and would like to provide input in as much as we can. You raise about what are the advantages and the disadvantages of an indefinite agreement, as well as the mechanisms for amendment, or at what point do we decide to review the agreement if it's indefinite? Firstly, let me concur with you, Chair, that yes, it's only those two amendments that are being proposed. And they're being proposed because the NLO has said, the National Liaison Officer, Ms. Mbakhai, has indicated that member states that are party to this AFRA agreement have been implementing the agreement for more than 30 years, that is starting from 1990. And they have realized that there's some disadvantages because each and every 5 years, there will be a need to renew the agreement every time the 5 year period lapses through which its period of validity exists. So the one advantage now is that if you have an indefinite agreement, you then eliminate the risk of having to go through the routine process of having to go through the request for extension for another 5 years, for another 5 years since 1990. So it takes away that risk or that disadvantage. Then the advantage also, what it does is that it allows for continuity in terms of execution by different members of the region of the agreement. Once cooperative projects have been identified and agreed for execution, then members are assured that the agreement remains valid, so they will be executing the agreement without having to worry that they still have to go back and go through the approvals for the extension. So that's the advantage. And also then strengthen collaboration and cooperation among the member states that are party to this AFRA agreement. And we see that as an advantage, that you then have members exchanging the experts and exchanging the knowledge, making sure that they leverage in the existing infrastructure within each country, as well as the expertise that exists amongst the experts in the African region. And therefore, it creates a favorable platform that facilitates that the African region attain its strategic goal of being self-sufficient in terms of the peaceful applications of nuclear technology. So we see these as much more key advantages of making sure that you have an agreement that is been extended indefinitely. That's permanent, and it ensures that there is continuity in the engagement and the application and the collaboration amongst the member states. Then, Chair, you're quite correct. In terms of strategic goal, strategic goal number four, you emphasize to interact continuously with and create awareness amongst decision makers, civil society, users, and the general public on the better and the benefits of the peaceful applications of nuclear science and technology. You're quite correct, Chair, that platforms like this, and you've specifically identified, as we've correctly put it in the presentation, that in June 2022, that is in the coming month, from the 20th of June to the 1st of July, there's going to be a regional nuclear energy management school that will be convened in partnership with the International Atomic Energy Agency between NECSA and the department, whereby an estimated number of 44 or 40 or so experts will descend to South Africa to come and study nuclear management. And these are senior management at a highest level to make sure that we standardize on the expertise that nuclear managers in the region and all over the world need to have. And these are put together by the International Atomic Energy Agency all over the world. And as part of this AFRA program, we're able to pull through such an important platform. And the participation thereof, members go through a selection criteria wherein they apply and then get attend. We've got a very comprehensive program. But we believe that, Chair, as you've alluded to, this can create an opportunity where we may invite members of Parliament, in particular the members of this portfolio committee, to attend. And we can share all this information with the committee. Maybe what we believe could be a very important opportunity for the committee to then get engaged and see what these platforms provide is participation through the opening session of this event. And there are a number of engagements that are lined up as part of this program, which I will request the National Liaison Officer and the National Coordinator, Ms. Makhaya, to elaborate as to the program that is being planned as part of this nuclear energy management school that we believe may be of interest and of value to create awareness to the stakeholders. And we've already invited some of the key stakeholders to consider this and also participate. And the ones that will then be attending this two-week school who have already been selected by the IEA going through this rigorous screening process that they will have to go through to demonstrate that they will be participating and making sure that they achieve the objectives or the goal, because the course itself is quite rigorous and it's very beneficial, creates an advanced understanding of what are the attributes and the skills that are required for a nuclear manager in the nuclear facility wherever in the world. So I believe this can create a good opportunity to the members to also have an opportunity to participate. Chair, with your approval, I hope I've covered all these key issues that you have raised, and I've given the sense of our understanding and also how this would then be done. Maybe what I need to deal with is the one of the mechanisms for the amendments and the reviewing of the agreement. Chair and honorable members, the reviewing of the agreement goes through a very detailed technical process within the AFRA. And it's determined through its the structure. The members have identified that there are areas that requires an amendment, and these will then be consulted among members until to the point when it's agreed. The technical merit, the legal merits will be weighed upon, and a decision will then be reached to say there is a warrant, these issues that would have been identified warrants that the agreement be reviewed. So it does provide for the areas or the mechanisms through which it's amended. It goes through the technical working group. After it's been processed and agreed technically, it then gets recommended to the highest decision-making body of AFRA, called the AFRA representatives, which meets every year in the margins of the IAEA General Conference, wherein then the proposed amendment would then be endorsed. So there is a formal process, and it gets engaged widely within the member states in the region, so that in the end, if there is a need to amend, the amendment could then be taken through. Even if they've been then agreed at a technical level, they then get subjected to the parliamentary process, as we are doing now, where we're subjecting it to our parliamentary processes to make sure that, because it's an international agreement, it has to be endorsed by Parliament so that it becomes binding to each of the member states. So Chair, I would request, with your permission, to stop here, and also then request the National Liaison Officer or the National Coordinator, Ms. Mahai, to also amplify some of the issues that you have raised, in particular around the School of Nuclear Energy Management. What are the processes that are involved in there? With your permission, may I request Ms. Mahai to also make an input, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mbambo. As you've mentioned, the Nuclear Energy Management School is part of a training course that is provided for the regional members. It is hosted by South Africa, but it involves other country member states. Like, we are having about 20 participants who are coming from the region. Mainly is those countries that are intending to expand on the nuclear program, especially on the power side. So the participants will be provided sort of like an international perspective, as well as the lessons learned and best practices from the IAEA side in different areas of nuclear, whether we are talking about nuclear fuel or nuclear safety issues, what has happened where, and how do you handle that? Or how do we strengthen our regulatory framework in terms of ensuring that whatever material we are using, or whether it's radioactive sources that are used for medicine or in other areas, how can those be handled? So the training will be for 2 weeks, and it's provided by the IAEA experts and together with some of our local experts. And the participants will be grouped in groups where there will be mentors who will be assisting them in different topics. But alongside the Energy Management School, we are having a visit by the Director of Technical Cooperation. That is mostly the person who's heading AFRA in the IAEA. He'll be coming to South Africa for a week to visit the different stakeholders that are involved in the AFRA program. This is as part of oversight as well. So what we've planned with him, as well as in relating to the strategic goal 4 that the chairperson was highlighting, on the Tuesday, on the 21st of June, we are having a nuclear lecture at Northwest University in Mahikeng, whereby we will be engaging with the youth, mostly the students, from the university and from around, just to talk about the nuclear issues, as well as we intend to invite the learners from the three different schools that are majoring in, who are in science and maths, who have taken them as their subjects, especially at high school, to kind of share an awareness about the nuclear field, what would be the possible careers that they will take. And we are hoping that this will spark the discussion whereby they also go back into the community, they go back to their schools to discuss what is there as well. And the director will also have some site visits to NEXA and as well to the Institute, South African Institute of Welding, whereby they are using techniques like non-destructive testing, which is one of the nuclear techniques to ensure strength in components and so on, because South Africa is well known as for assisting other countries. We saw that in the slide that Mr. Mbabo presented, where we are having fellowships, there are some coming from other countries like Cameroon. They want to have a center that is similar to us, and the South African Institute of Welding is providing the training to the fellows from the other, from that country. I think the chairperson is definitely correct that in terms of strategic for the stakeholders that we have listed there, we definitely need to foster our communication and raise awareness that we are, so that when it comes to things like decision-making discussions, there's also the other information that is shared that is not in the formal forums as well. And I believe this is one of the areas that also at AFRA they impress upon, that we need to also include our decision makers in events, or we sort of tailor make those where we can have the discussions and include the IAEA as well in terms of creating a broader awareness. And we'll definitely look into that one, chairperson, and try to have that. But the Nuclear Energy Management School is open for the members if they would be interested to attend. Thank you, chairperson, and Mr. Mbambo.
Thank you, Ms. Makhai, and chairperson, thank you very much. We hope we've covered most or all of the issues that the chair has raised. May I then hand over to the chair.
Thank you very much again, Mr. Mbambo, with your responses and your presentation. Now, I think some other issues will require that us as honorable members to continuously interact with them. And the reason I was asking this question is simple, because in my view, maybe you can, you must assist us from time to time. For an example, when we continuously engage, even with the department, recently we just did that in terms of your annual performance plans and priorities. I would imagine a situation where you are one of those who initiate some basis for ratification of certain aspects of an existing agreement, but it is not contained or part of your priorities that has been submitted. That's why I'm saying it's a matter that from a committee point of view, we must find mechanisms to deal with them. Not not to be reduced only to rectify what would have been decided on when we have not tested the demand or need for such ratification to take place. Being the case as it may, can we now go to the other item? I assume honorable members have been fully abreast of the development. Can we go to the other item, the one that we talked about? I don't want to open honorable members by trying to confine. I will come in with my own suggestions or inputs when members have expressed their views. The point, though, honorable members, is that we can't discuss the matter now. The question is, here are issues in the public domain, and they may reflect things that the committee has got an interest or is supposed to be responsible of. What can we do, or what is the feeling of members if there is an agreement that the committee has to attend those issues? Maybe let's just get an idea of what is it, and then we will try and summarize what we think could be the best approach or option on these matters, and then we'll go to the matters. Is there any take now on the item that we talked about, the Snapchat on the approach? I'm not seeing, can I get a sense? I see the hand of Honorable Mahlaule, Honorable Matokwe, Honorable Malinga. Is there any other hand? Okay, let me take those hands for now. Honorable Mahlaule, then Honorable Matokwe, then it will be Honorable Malinga.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I may not be well qualified to speak on the first issue you raised of the arrest of the DDG, former DDG. And that may be because I'm not privy of what happened before we became part of the committee, but also that the law enforcement agencies are dealing with the issue in the manner that they see fit to do so. I may not be qualified to do that. And just as when we were dealing with these other issues, I was trying to get an angle of the role of the committee on the issue. I am struggling, but nonetheless, let me speak on the other issue that I think the committee can't be a bystander on it. As a committee, you would understand that we ought not to be acting on news headlines. And I'm saying this because the issue of Glencore is not well covered by our local medias. But because we're a committee of parliament, we ought not to be driven by that. We ought to do our job.
Sorry, Honorable Mashaul, I'm alerted on something very dangerously so. Please. No, it's not what you are dealing with. The report, we have not adopted it or rejected or objected to it. Sorry to take you back. There is no decision. The report is tabled for this committee to recommend for Parliament to adopt the proposed amendment. Sorry, Honor. Is there any move for the adoption of the proposed amendment on the AFRA? I think that's what, is that correct, Ariwa Ayanda?
That's correct, sir. Yes. There's the report that will be ATC chair.
Yes. Oh, you have to read it. Okay.
I can read it, yes, chair.
Yes.
The report of the Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources and Energy on the revised African Regional Cooperative Agreement for Research, Development, and Training related to Nuclear Science and Technology, the AFRA agreement, tabled in terms of Section 231, Subsection 2 of the Constitution, 1996, dated 31 May 2022. The Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources and Energy, having considered the revised African Regional Cooperative Agreement for Research, Development and Training related to Nuclear Science and Technology, the AFRA Agreement, tabled in terms of Section 231, Subsection 2 of the Constitution, 1996, on 31 May 2022, recommends that the House approve the revised agreement report to be considered.
Okay, that's the issue, honorable members. Is there any mover? Thank you, honorable Kola is moving for the adoption. Any seconder? Is that Kula or Bilangulu?
Yes, Bilangulu.
Bilangulu, Chair.
Oh, yes, yes, okay. Why your voice today is like that one of Kula? Okay, any seconder?
Seconded, Chair.
Honorable Malinga, seconded. The report is therefore agreed to. Sorry, Honorable Mashaule, I am back with you now. Sorry for that disturbance.
Thank you, Chair. So as I was saying, Chair, that we can't be driven by the media reports, and if it's there's no sensationalization as normally there is sensationalization of issues, we do not do anything about it. The best thing we can do for ourselves and the country is that an international scandal like that, committed by South Africans, and in your unpacking, you said it's a South African company with a CEO that is South African. The most sensible thing we can do is for them to come and explain themselves, the actions they have taken that, by the way, put the country into disrepute, the sector into disrepute. We may not deal with the issue of in any case, they've admitted to wrongdoings, but the issue may be, why did they do it? Did they do it in South Africa? It's not named there whether they have done it in South Africa or not. To what extent would they have done it if they have done it in South Africa? And in my view, we can take it from there, because it's a criminal offense in this country to bribe people. And if it happens that they were to come to the committee and say, yes, we bribed judges, we bribed politicians, we bribed so and so, it's really a serious offense in our country, internationally and otherwise. So we probably need to create a platform for them to come and appraise the committee if they have done the similar acts in our country. Not only that, but why did they do that in the first place? I think we can take it from there, Chair. But we can't let it slide, like we are not a committee of parliament, which must understand the behavior of this magnitude, Chair. It's just a very big international scandal that we can't ignore. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. My gadget was just giving me a problem. I think I would want to to concur with Honorable Mahlaule first. And secondly, just to perhaps just highlight that as a committee, I think it should also be our culture and our responsibility that whatever comes up, even if it's not in the in the schedule of the committee, but whatever is related to minerals or is relating to energy, we ought to respond or we ought to discuss it, including the first matter, as much as the DDG served in the fifth parliament. But my understanding is that some of the decisions that they made, they did affect and they did contribute to some of the challenges that we are facing as the committee and as the department right now. And maybe after thorough investigation or after thorough discussions, we might find out that some of the people that are implicated are still serving in the department or are still serving in some of the entities right now. So I think it is important that as the committee, we discuss and probe both issues in terms of how do they affect the business of the day currently and what needs to be done, because there always needs to be accountability, and the only people that can drive that accountability is this committee. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honorable Mele.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think with the first one, Chair, of the DDG, maybe it's going to be difficult for the PC because it's sub judice. But I concur with the Glencore issue, with the sentiments that the whip has just alluded to, that can we make time to for these people to come and maybe brief or tell us their side of the story. But with the ones that is in court, I'm not sure, because the court has not heard the side of the DDG, because I think the news said he dropped, he fainted in court or something. So even the court has not heard the story. So I'm not sure what would be the case, Chair. Thank you very much.
I see now the hand of Honorable Lorema. Let me give her before maybe we suggest, can I give Honorable
Lorema? Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think Honorable Mahlaule has got an interesting idea about getting Glencore to come and account to the Portfolio Committee. I don't know whether the admission of bribery covers South Africa. It doesn't appear to have. But if they were guilty of bribing people in numerous countries, what's to say that they didn't also try and bribe people in South Africa and just haven't been caught? So I think having them account to us is a very good idea. On the other issue, the issue of the DDG, I think it highlights a broader issue, which is the issue of rehabilitation funds, mine rehabilitation funds. In this case, they are alleged to have been stolen. What I would very much like is an update briefing from the department about the status of mine rehabilitation funds in general. And that would, I think, inform the committee about the issue without us necessarily worrying about contravening the fact that this is in court. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Can we make the following consideration, Honorable Member? I take what Honorable Matog was saying, maybe expand to that. One, my fear, Honorable Lorema and Honorable Malinga, is that there is a ruling, or not a ruling, there is a legal standing advice that the fact that a matter, there is no determination of court, but a matter is in court, I think, legal services gave the fact that it doesn't mean a committee can't deal with the issue, except the merit of the matter in court. Can we, will it not help us as a committee first to get a guidance, one, from the researcher, come and present something as a researcher, in consultation with legal services, One, on how the committee can handle matters that relate to the case of the DDG. Two, how it should, if it does, handle matters that relate to the allegations I don't want to say it's difficult, or with the case that relates to Glencore, both in terms of their existence as a South African company that plays at a global stage, but also the its implications on the said scandal. And then from there, if we get that guidance, we make the considerations that members say, decide who and how to invite to look at this thing. I must say, at some point in my engagement with the staff, I had said that we might, until Parliament made the announcement, have to look at issues that would have been raised, for an example, in the State Capture Commission, or whether are there issues that relate to the committee, which we may have to interact with. But unfortunately, Parliament said now they are waiting for, I'm not sure whether that we won't be jumping the gun. The point that Honorable Matoko was saying, that look at in overall, sometimes it's better to be proactive. But now I understand there's a decision of Parliament. Maybe they can look at that decision of Parliament and how then does it relate to what the committee is suggesting. So if will that not suffice? And then based on that guidance, including the legal view, we'll then agree whether the proposed or the coming legal opinion phase, or we decide to move ahead, so that we are, from a point of view, we would have done what, from an initiation of processes is concerned. Will that not suffice? Maybe, and then we can then, based on that legal advice and that researched work, including facts that could be on the table that are undisputed, which is what I think the researcher can help, that are undisputed. Something called, it is common cause, that there's one, two, and three. And based on that, this is what has to be done. And then we move from an informed position. Will that not help, honorable members? I still see the old hands, or I knew.
It's a new hand, Chair.
Yes, Honourable Lauren.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think you're right about getting some advice. I concur with that. However, I do think we must be careful not to just restrict this to state capture. It's quite possible that there was bad behaviour outside of the state capture. There may have been bribery in another context.
Let me come in. I'm saying that leave the state capture, because there is already a decision by Parliament.
Yeah.
Honorable Matoko was saying, so I'm saying that legal advice could tell us what more we could do beyond what we might be talking about now. I agree 100%, but I was just saying my discussion with the staff was, shouldn't we consider now looking at what is contained to assist the committee to say, in the State Capture Commission, there's one, two, and three, and the committee might have to do this. But Parliament came in and said, I think they are looking, waiting for the fourth edition of the State Capture Commission. Based on what then in overall is contained, it will start to act. So we are a committee of Parliament. Unfortunately, we might be jumping the gun, because Parliament would not have taken a decision what to do with the report. So that issue, I was just saying, we can pack it aside and then deal with what, as a committee, we think we're supposed to deal with as per the advice of legal services as well as the research information at our disposal. But I just wanted to clarify that part that no, we can't be limited as a committee to the State Capture Commission. We have got a duty beyond that.
Yeah, quite agree, Mr. Chair. While I've got the mic on, I'd just like to also talk about the other issue, and that is just that I'd appreciate a briefing on the not so much just on the cases in court. In fact, not even that at all necessarily, but it has highlighted the issue of mine rehabilitation funds and how well catered they are. And, you know, I remember some time back we had a briefing, and this is several years back, we had a briefing on the general state of rehabilitation funds. What I'm proposing is that we have a repeat of that and an update.
Okay. Is there any second, Honourable Member?
Agreed, Chair.
Thank you very much. That one, it will be done. I will advise Honourable Norima, I'm sure the committee staff is listening, that when we deal also with the next quarter report, although we are going on to a long recess, that they must consider including it on the next program of the next quarterly program of the committee. Honourable members, if that is the agreement, we will try and find as the soonest possible date that can help us on these issues to quickly attend to them. Can we now go to the minutes of the 24th, Ari?
You go, Chair.
Now, what that's, you can take that cute face of Honorable Mahlaula off the screen. Okay. The minutes of the 24th. Okay, let's go. Okay, is there any, in the absence of corrections or additions, is there any move of the minute?
I move, Chair.
Honorable Malinga moves. Any second?
May Malinga was not in the meeting, Chair.
Yes, I was in the meeting. You. Thanks, Ari.
You're welcome.
You were not in the meeting.
No, I logged in at 9, whereas you started at the 8. No, I did not see it. It was those minutes. Sorry, Chair.
Okay. Is there any move of the minutes? But you were part of the meeting. Is there any move of the minutes?
Chair, I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Any second? Any second?
May Malinga can second, Chair.
Any second? Okay. Honorable members, any matters arising? Honorable members, on that note, thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned. We will revert back with you with regards to the decision that the committee or recommendation that the committee has taken today on the other matters, but it seems there's a general agreement on what has to be followed. On that note, can I declare the meeting adjourned until further notice? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Can you please stay behind?
Does Honorable Malinga agree that I must stay behind? We must stay behind.
She's gone already, Chair.
Thank you.